today. Why wouldn't the Conservative government spend £20 million to stop children in England going hungry this half term? It's the October half term in 2020, and sadly, the thing that we're all talking about is how many children in England are going hungry in the school holidays. To understand what is happening, The Guardian's Amna Modin travelled to a food bank in Hillingdon, West London.
So we've got some food laid out here. Could you just talk me through what you guys would put into one parcel?
Right, we've got half a loaf of bread, whether it be white or brown. Mm-hmm. We've got option one is jam, option two is chocolate spread, option three is ham, and if they don't like any of them, they can then have cheese.
So I met Kim and Joe. Kim is the food bank manager and Joe is one of the co-founders and kind of secretary of the food bank. And they showed me around, they showed me what they'd been up to over the weekend.
Just some little like chocolate bars and some soup and some beans, so you can make yourself beans on toast or soup in the day.
The brown bags that they had were full of 5 days' worth of lunches for a child. And that one bag, which is meant to feed a child for the week, cost £4.
This, all of this is just £4?
Yeah. We worked out that they're all roughly £4 a bag.
So how do you guys feel when they say, this is not something we should be covering as a state, it should be parents that should be feeding them?
This is £4.
£4
for 5 days.
They need that extra just to help them get over that week. Mm. Or else these children are going to sit at home and they're going to be hungry. Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't be going on in this world now. Mm.
No, I think I'll be honest, when I got them to take it all out and lay it down on the table, I was really taken back by how little there was there. You know, the photographer who was with me, who is a mum, you know, she immediately kind of went into this zone where she said, you know, I'm trying to figure out how to split this over 5 days and I'm actually not sure how I would do that. So I think even though it was an incredible response and it was amazing how much they were able to do and what they put together, I think the fact that that's what the government's recommended kind of shocked me.
Boris Johnson has decided not to give extra money to extend the free school meals programme into half term, despite massive public pressure led by the footballer Marcus Rashford. The Prime Minister is refusing to budge, but councils all over England have decided to provide food anyway, ironically including where Amna was in Hillingdon, a local authority that covers Johnson's own constituency. From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, why are children in England still going hungry in 2020? Why has one of the most successful footballers in the country, Manchester United's Marcus Rashford, got involved in this?
Well, he might be a millionaire footballer now, but Marcus Rashford grew up poor.
Gabby Hinsliff is a Guardian columnist.
He was one of five kids with a single mum growing up in Withenshaw in Manchester. Wasn't always enough money to go around and not always enough food either.
We used to go to a shop called Pound World, and everything was under a pound, and you know, we'd sort of schedule out the week, so we'd get seven yogurts and you can have one yogurt a day and so on. So she done the best she could within the circumstances.
He said he remembers the sound of his mum crying herself to sleep because she wasn't always sure that she was going to be able to make ends meet. You know, there were times when there wasn't enough food in the house and he used to go round to her friends and see if he could get something there.
I just knew how hard that my mum was working anyway. So, you know, I'd never moan, I'd never do anything. If there's food on the table, there's food on the table. If there's not, I had friends that understood my same situation. And maybe it was possible for me to go to their house, get some food or whatever.
He said that one of the reasons he joined the Manchester United Youth Academy a year earlier at 11 is that you got catered accommodation with it. So free meals, essentially. And that meant his mum knew that he was going to get enough to eat.
You know, she made that decision when I was 11 years old, and United allowed it. So that was the reason why I ended up going at a younger age compared to the others. It was to help my mum with her situation and also get me out of the situation that we was in. So
that's why it's been hard for government dealing with Marcus Rashford. This comes out of lived experience. He's not some celebrity who's in it for the free PR. He knows what it feels like to go to bed not having had enough to eat.
tell me how he actually got this campaign going.
He's been working for a while with the poverty and food waste charity Fair Share, and during lockdown helped with delivering meals to kids in the Greater Manchester area who obviously weren't getting their free school meals at school anymore during lockdown.
This is all going on at a time where kids should be concentrating on schoolwork and stuff like that, and it's just crazy to think that this is still going on at this, you know, we're in 2020 now, and it's just something that I don't believe should be happening.
Free school meals were extended to kids over the Easter holidays to sort of to tide them through that period where they'd normally been off school. And in June, Rashford started campaigning for the same thing to happen over summer. Initially, government resisted, but eventually they gave in, and free food vouchers were handed out over summer.
We have to understand the pressures that families are under right now, and that's why we've responded as we have. I talked to Marcus Rashford today and congratulated him on his campaign, which, to be honest, I only became aware of very recently today, and I thank him for what he's done.
Who is actually eligible for free school meals, and how do families claim them?
It's if you're on certain benefits, including income support, universal credit, if you're under a certain income, child tax credit, then you can apply for free school meals. It was about 1.3 million children across the country were on free school meals this summer, but it will be likely to be going up because of the pandemic, which means obviously a lot of parents more hard up than they were.
The fact that Marcus Rashford was fronting this made a huge difference, didn't it?
Yes, it was a non-partisan figure. You know, it was someone he's been very careful throughout the campaign to say, this isn't about party politics. This is just about doing the right thing. He was someone who had a huge public profile and someone that maybe reached out to people who wouldn't normally be following politics that closely. So it's been a brilliantly run campaign, and it's been much harder, I think, for the government to sort of brush off than something that was run by a charity or lobbying group, let alone by another political party.
And after the summer, the government took their time to get there, didn't they? But they appreciated that Marcus Rashford was very much seen as a national hero by then.
Yes, and I think when Marcus Rashford got his MBE in the Queen's Birthday Honours, you know, that was a real sign of recognition for the campaign.
It's a nice moment for me personally, but, you know, I feel like I'm still sort of at the beginning of the journey that I set out to try and achieve, so.
And government seemed, you know, pleased to be congratulating him on that.
So how on earth do we go from there? From the government recognising Marcus Rashford's role in all of this, recognising his public profile, giving him an MBE, to where we are now?
I think when they brought back schools in September, government seems to have been on fully on kind of, right, let's now get back to normal mode. They seemingly thought this was a sort of emergency measure they agreed only during lockdown that could be withdrawn now lockdown was over. But I'm not sure people feel back to normal yet. And if anything, you know, when job losses from the pandemic are starting to kick in this autumn, that's when there's a greater need for help. And you know, the fact that something people were seemingly prepared to tolerate in the past, because there's always been holiday hunger, you know, we've been talking about food bank use for nearly a decade now. Suddenly people don't seem prepared to tolerate that anymore. There's a sense that when everything's very bleak and scary, we value a bit of kindness more. So Marcus Rashford clearly caught the public imagination. But what changed politically is Labour used an opposition day motion to get the Rashford plan put to a vote in Parliament.
In summer, when this issue was debated, in this House, the government saw sense, did the right thing, and ensured no child would go hungry over the summer holidays. But this time, despite many families facing even more challenging circumstances now than they did 4 months ago, shamefully, the government's walking away from its obligation to hungry children.
And that put a lot of Tory MPs in an incredibly difficult position where they're trooping through the lobbies, physically, publicly saying, no, let's not feed poor kids, you know, after Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland all accepted the case for doing exactly that. Now, obviously, some Tory MPs did rebel. 5 Tory MPs voted with the Labour Party, a handful abstained.
The ayes to the right, 261. The noes to the left, 322. So the noes have it. The noes have it. Unlock.
But basically what happened is government won the vote, but it lost the argument. And I think that was in part because of the very aggressive, combative way in which it made that argument.
It was quite dramatic, wasn't it, to watch Tories walking through those lobbies. When you were watching it, were you aware then of just how bad it was looking for them?
The main thing I remember at that point is just thinking, how has government got itself into a state where it's doing this. You know, it's one thing picking a fight with an incredibly popular national treasure in public. It's quite another forcing your MPs through the lobbies on something this divisive. Why haven't they found a way to get around it at this point?
How much would it cost to extend the scheme again?
It costs £20 million a week, roughly, in summer. So the idea is that's what it would cost to extend through autumn, half term as well. I know that sounds like a lot of money, but in sort of Treasury terms, it's fairly small change. If you think that Eat Out to Help Out, subsidising people having restaurant dinners, costs £500 million.
Do you understand why? Do you know what they were thinking? I mean, was this about the finances? That seems unlikely given that you put that £20 million in context and it's tiny. Or was it something about not wanting to be pushed around politically? Or was there another justification?
Yeah, ministers say they're giving councils £63 million for families facing financial difficulties already. You know, they would say that they increased income support by £20 at the beginning of the pandemic to give families a sort of cushion to account for the extra costs of being in lockdown. So they would say they're already doing enough, you know, they don't need to do more. But councils would say that a lot of that money's already gone. It's spent on dealing with the costs of the pandemic for which they haven't been sufficiently compensated by central government. And I think that leaves Downing Street struggling to convince people that it's not really trying to solve this problem on the cheap. Obviously, there are arguments that free school meals are not a panacea. You know, they're only a temporary fix to a problem that's about a lot more than food. Handing out free school meal vouchers does nothing for the root causes of poverty. You know, we know that some families might be too proud to come forward and claim that kind of help as well. So there are plenty of legitimate criticisms that you could make about free school meals. But the problem government's got is the urgency of all this. You know, half term started and the problem is right here and right now. You're not going to solve many root causes of poverty by Friday. You know, there is an urgent problem that needs dealing with, and that's the argument it can't get away from.
Were they thinking in Downing Street about what this looked like politically?
I'm not sure they were thinking enough. Cabinet ministers kept saying over and over again, you know, we're not going back on this. We're not changing course. This is the decision we've made and we're sticking to it.
Of course, no child should go hungry. Nobody could possibly want that. The question is how best to do it. And I think councils have got a very important role in this.
And it's only very, very recently that we've started to hear a slightly more emollient line from Number 10, which I think is realising that digging its heels in hasn't worked. And there are hints that there may be a U-turn in the offing.
We don't want to see children going hungry this winter, this Christmas, certainly not as a result of any inattention by this government. And you're not going to see that.
It's not just what we've been hearing from ministers, is it? We've had some pretty inflammatory comments from MPs. Maybe not a surprise that Philip Davies, the MP for Shipley, was quite outspoken about this. He apparently told a teenage constituent, "I know virtue signalling is in vogue, but I take the old-fashioned view that parents should be primarily responsible for feeding their children and not the state." And then there was social media, and in particular, Ben Bradley. Tell me about that.
Ben Bradley's the MP for Mansfield, which he always says, you know, it's the first blue brick in the red wall, a seat that fell from Labour to the Tories in 2017. He said on Twitter, in defence of the refusal to fund school meals through the holidays, that at one school in his constituency, 75% of kids have a social worker, 25% of parents are illiterate, one kid lives in a crack den, another in a brothel. These are the kids that most need our help. Extending free school meals doesn't reach these kids.
And I have no wish to fall out with markets. The point I'm simply making is that I think that the state can add to what's happening within our communities, that broad community support to help vulnerable people.
And Mark Jenkinson, who's the MP for Workington, rode into Ben Bradley's defence and said that in his constituency, food parcels are sold or traded for drugs, which had a lot of people saying, really? I'm not sure you're going to get a lot of cocaine in exchange for tins of own brand baked beans. I mean, this stuff sounds like urban myth almost. But they're all variations on a theme, which is encouraging the idea that people will somehow cheat or waste the money, or that they shouldn't be needing it in the first place, you know, that parents should somehow be taking responsibility for their own children rather than relying on the state as if you know, this was somehow a lifestyle choice. These are very old tropes in the welfare debate that I think people are going to recognise. I think it's whipped up a lot of very raw feeling, and these MPs are going to be very exposed if the government now U-turns.
I mean, it feels like they got the public mood completely wrong.
Utterly wrong. I think the response has been anger, not since probably Dominic Cummings' trip to Barnard Castle, the infamous trip to Barnard Castle. The sense that it's cut through, even among people who don't normally follow politics very closely, somehow this has caught their imagination and they're really angry about it. It's really got through to people in a way that not everything does.
We've now reached a point at which the government's own advisory group, if you like, the Social Mobility Commission, has warned that some of the poorest parts of the country have been moved into the highest tiers when it comes to the second wave of COVID-19. That means a bigger hit to the economy. It means hunger rising further. And even they're saying the government should extend the scheme. Plus, businesses and also local authorities, including Conservative ones, have started to act. Tell me what's been happening.
It started off with cities like Manchester and Liverpool saying, well, whatever the government does, we'll make sure that free school meals are extended during the holidays. Then Conservative councils started to join in. Kensington and Chelsea was one of the first, I think, to change tack. And now Uxbridge and South Ruislip, which is Boris Johnson's constituency, the local authority in Hillingdon, is also taking a stand against the Prime Minister's decision. And when that happens, when local government is revolting against central government, that's when you know something's gone very badly wrong.
Tuna, give me two tuna, one of that big can there. Brilliant.
Amna, you're in Hillingdon, which is the local authority where one of the local MPs is Boris Johnson. It's quite something to see the Prime Minister's own local authority essentially take a stand against his decision. What were people saying about him there?
I think there were huge frustrations with not just Boris Johnson, but the entire government and the response to this growing economic and health crisis that's gripping not just the country, but his borough as well. I think people wanted him to come to the food banks to see what families are going through and respond effectively to it.
He should be down here talking to us himself. We'll take him through what we do every day. Not a problem.
Were they talking about Marcus Rashford?
Yes, they really were. You know, I think what kind of came up was, why does this football player who's in his early 20s, why does it have to take him to bring this issue to the front line as he has? You know, it shouldn't be his job to be doing this. It should be the job of the government.
Well, is it, should be doing
I feel, I, you know, if it wasn't for Marcus Rashford, if you look at that situation, yeah, we would have not. There would have been families and children. And you know, not on the other side of that, where you can't feed your children, then who is it down under? The social services. And what did the social services do when the pandemic went? They shut their doors. Mm. They didn't help families. They didn't give out food vouchers.
Was there a sense that COVID had made things really hard for people?
I think so, definitely. I think that's what's different now than before. I think a lot of people are self-isolating. People have lost their jobs. People are struggling to get universal credit. Money isn't going as far enough as it had before. So it's an extraordinary situation, and they believe we need an extraordinary response from the government.
And it will cause mayhem in the house.
And for children and for watching their parents go through it is very difficult. Parents to go through it and not be able to provide for their children is very difficult.
Presumably, there's also quite a lot of stigma around going to get free meals in this way.
Definitely. I think speaking to the food bank manager, Kim, something that she said that stood with me was some people didn't want to come to the front door. They would be getting messages on Facebook, you know, their phones would be going off all the time with someone saying, look, I really desperately need food. I don't know how I'll be able to feed my child. Could I please get some? I just can't bring myself to come in, or I don't want anyone else to see me. So they would go out and meet them somewhere, or they would deliver the food just to make sure that, yeah, that child had been fed that day. But they say there's huge level of stigma to asking for food, particularly as, you know, several Tory MPs have said, you know, it's not the responsibility of the state to feed your children. It should be the parent. And if a parent who's really struggling has not been able to, as they say, meet that responsibility, they'll see themselves as a failure. And I think that came up as well. You know, the volunteers said they're constantly dealing with parents who think they're failures.
You see so many coming in here and they are really so down because, I mean, we've had them come in here and cry and we're like, have a cup of tea, have a biscuit, because they're starving.
Yeah.
And you know, we're in 2020. People shouldn't be starving.
Yeah. Amna, what did it make you feel like to speak to those volunteers, Kim and Joe, and to hear how they're having to help families?
I think the issue of free school meals is one that touches on me quite personally. Someone I grew up with free school meals, and something I always find quite funny, particularly in journalism, is a lot of people say, haven't you done well considering you had free school meals and you grew up in a council house? But I say I've done well because of those two facts. I've done well because I was a free school meal student and because I grew up on a council estate. My mum didn't have to worry about rent or us being evicted, and I can just knuckle down and do work. I did well because I was fed and didn't worry about being hungry and was able to revise. That is the point of a welfare state, a welfare safety net. When that disappears, then you begin to think, okay, mum's really worried about rent. Mum's really worried about how she's going to feed us, and that takes your attention away from doing what you should be doing as a student, which is studying.
Coming up, how this is backfiring for the Conservative Party. Gabby, it seems extraordinary that we are hearing about this level of hunger in 2020. What has happened?
I think even affluent families became aware just how important food was to all of us in lockdown. I mean, everyone's supermarket bills went up when the whole family was at home. And sometimes when, you know, everything else was shut and there was nothing else they could do, the one thing you could say yes to when your kids were bored and miserable was food, was treats, was snacks.
Yeah, and I think that period when it was suddenly so hard to get to the supermarket and the shelves were empty brought home to people who've never had to worry about food how panicked you must feel if you don't have access to enough to eat. Tell me about the history of free school meals. When were they introduced?
Free school meals have actually been around for over a century, since 1906. I think the idea was that if education was going to be compulsory, it was only right that the state would provide a hot meal when you turned up for it. And at first it was mainly breakfast. But free school meals were made compulsory in 1944 as part of the war effort. You know, it was this idea about maintaining morale. And we've essentially had them ever since.
You know, it's been a political debate in the Times that you've been in the lobby covering politics, in the Times that I've been in the lobby. The Conservatives, I would say, were actually pushed by the Lib Dems into, for example, offering free school meals universally for younger children during the coalition government. But it has become something that we just understand as part of what is offered. But I guess the strange thing that we perhaps should have thought about long ago is that if kids are hungry during term time, then they're almost certainly hungry during the holidays too.
It's never really made sense. I mean, if you, as a parent, if you can't afford three meals a day in term time, you don't magically get any richer in the holidays. And what's happened in the past is that food bank use has always risen in school holidays. You know, you often see food banks asking for extra help or extra donations at that time. But until now, people seem to just sort of weirdly accepted that that was how life was. You know, it's interesting how times are changing, attitudes are changing, perhaps through the pandemic.
Gabby, it seems such an own goal for the Tories. They knew how impactful the Rashford campaign had been back in Easter and in the summer. That is why they gave him an MBE. So they must have seen this coming, and yet they dug in. How bad politically has this been for them?
If you talk to Tory MPs, a lot of them are a bit sort of, you know, open-jawed, feeling how do we kind of end up in this situation over something that effectively costs so little? You know, was it worth it, the amount of political damage that they've incurred just to stand their ground on this? I mean, I have to say, there is a certain kind of Tory voter that absolutely agrees with government taking hard line on this, that thinks it's all down to irresponsible parents, you know, and it's all very reminiscent for people old enough to remember those days of the 1970s when Margaret Thatcher became known as the milk snatcher when she was education secretary for phasing out free milk in schools.
Whatever happens to school meals, it's been safe to assume until this year that young children at school would at least get a nourishing drink of milk. From September, the only school children who will get free milk are the under sevens and those who are actually sick or weak.
It was a little thing in a way. It must have looked like a really easy cut to make on paper, but it was turned out to be much more emotive than she'd realised. Something that, you know, if you had your time again, you wouldn't do. And I think the modern Conservative Party is going to look back on this as one of those moments, you know, when it really wasn't worth cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Yeah, and in fact, Thatcher was asked to remove free milk from nursery kids much later on when she was Prime Minister. By Ken Clark, actually, it would have saved £4 million. And there is a handwritten note in which she said, no, it would cause a terrible row. I know, I went through it 19 years ago. And like Thatcher, this party has also secured a majority by winning over those so-called red wall seats in the Midlands and the North, including Ben Bradley's Mansfield. Do we know how this is going down in those areas?
We don't yet have the polling to tell us exactly how it's going down with the voters in those areas that the Tories need to hang on to, but it is fair to say that a lot of MPs' email boxes are running red hot on this one. I think it's a test, isn't it, of whether the government means what it said when it wooed those constituencies, which was, you know, it was going to be different. It wasn't going to be the same old kind of Tory party that they knew. You know, Boris Johnson made all these promises about, we're not going back to austerity, we're all about levelling up, we're all about sort of doing things, you know, understanding these places and getting into these places in a way that we haven't done in the past. And I think this becomes a sort of first concrete test of what that actually means. Does the Conservative Party really understand the places it says it wants to represent? Does it really have a gut feeling for them? And does it treat them any differently than it's treated them in the past? Or does it just reawaken bad memories of what happened to some of these towns and cities under Thatcher?
That was Gabby Hinsliff and Amna Modin. Do go to theguardian.com to read Gabby's columns on this and Amna's reporting. I can see this coming round once again. At Christmas, Boris Johnson has promised children won't go hungry, but hasn't told us yet how he is planning to ensure that. Before we go, I want to mention a Guardian Live event coming up with our economics correspondent Richard Partington. He's going to be joined by the Resolution Foundation's Torsten Bell and Miatta Fanbulla from the New Economics Foundation to discuss the potentially disastrous impact of a second wave of coronavirus on the UK economy. You can book tickets online. It's on Wednesday, the 18th of November at 7 p.m. That's it for today. My thanks to Gabby Hinsliff and Amna Modin. This episode was produced by Hannah Moore. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow.